You are listening to Bible Direction for Life, the sermon podcast of Westside Baptist Church in Bremerton, Washington. We pray that the preaching and teaching you hear on this podcast connects the truth of the Bible to your life, that you would learn more about the triune God who made you and what he made you for. And now, here's today's message.
Okay, well, we are in lesson three of the Christianity Explained series. So who remembers what lesson one was about? Lesson one. Anyone? What? Did someone say over here?
The Son of Man.
Yeah, Son of God. Yes, but... Yes, Son of God. Do you remember what we talked about with the Son of God? Son of God? What does it mean that Jesus is the Son of God? What, one word that sums that up. Peter.
Authority.
Authority. Excellent. Last week. No, not last week. We were here last week. We weren't studying this last week. So 2 weeks ago, what was the second lesson about? The second leg in our stool of Christianity. The cross. There we go. Perfect. So we have been talking about, in the first three lessons, we're trying to build the three-legged stool of what is it that's fundamental to the Christian faith. And the idea is that we would take this series, and as someone is interested in Christianity, that we take them through this six-part series that explains from the beginning to the end, what does it look like to be a Christian? And we are working through the Gospel of Mark with them. If you have your handout from this week, you'll see on the back of it that it says Mark chapter 11 through 16. That's the homework for this week. The homework for last week would have been the reading of Mark chapter 6 through 10. So the idea is that you would have a time that you have set up with this individual who's interested in learning more about Christianity. You would have met with them twice already. They would have read Mark chapter 1 through 10. And now you're sitting back down again. I've got my tea or my coffee or whatever it is that we've ordered. And we're sitting down to talk about the gospel of Jesus with them once again for week number three. So the first place that you start on all of these or on these last two lessons is the review of this homework page that they would have filled out. And they would have presumably read Mark chapter 6 through 10 and then flagged anything they found interesting or flagged any questions. So, have any of you read that, and do we have any questions? Let's start there. If you don't, that's fine. I imagine that in this group, it's not the kind of thing that there will be deep questions about, because we're not talking about a deep study of Mark. We're just simply talking about a reading of it and kind of an overview of it. But with someone who is new to the gospel and has maybe never read one of the gospels at all, or perhaps any of the Bible, I imagine that there are going to be the kind of things in that text that strike them as new and unfamiliar and interesting. And I think it'll be really fascinating. This is one of the things I'd be interested to hear from people as we go through this, is like, what is it that people are asking about the Bible? Because it's one thing for them to have thoughts and ideas about Christianity, but when they read the Bible for themselves for the first time, you know, this is the, I can't even count how many number of times this is through the book of Mark for me, but someone who is encountering the Gospel of Mark for the first time, what is it that they find interesting or different or odd? And it might surprise us. I'll be interested to see what those things are. So tonight, though, we're going to go through, like we did last time, we're going to go through the lesson together. And I want you to think about it and pay attention to it in the way that is imagining that you are going to have to leave right after this, and this week you've got someone who you're going to have to teach this to. Because that's the goal, is that we learn this information and we learn this the course such that then we are able to take someone through the gospel. So we've got an Easter service coming up where we are praying and planning and going to do what we can to have unbelievers in the service with us. And the hope would be that as they hear the gospel preached on Easter Sunday, that then there would be people who say, man, I'm interested in Jesus. And then having gone through this, we're able to say, hey, I've got a brother or I've got a sister who would be very glad to sit down and meet with you and talk to you about Christianity. And so then we would come to you, or maybe you have a friend that you brought that are interested, and you say, hey, I've got someone. You come and get one of these books from the bookstore, and then you go through this six-week course with them. So you're not just learning tonight to take in some information. None of this information is going to be dramatically and tragically new to any of you, most likely. But it's the kind of information we want you to ingest so that you're able to teach it to other people. Okay, so with that in mind, let's go ahead and dive in. So the first thing that we're going to do when we sit down with people for lesson number three is that we're going to review the first two lessons. So lesson number one, we talked about Jesus as being the Son of God, and we talked about how that means that he has authority. He has authority. We had seven different things he has authority over, and they are different in the lesson book than the handout, but I'll read what they have here in the lesson book. It's teacher. He has authority as a teacher, authority over sickness, authority to forgive sins, authority over people, and then he has authority over nature, authority over demons, and there was one other that I am missing, that I am forgetting from the handout. But he has these ways that in the Gospel of Mark, we see Jesus exercising authority. And one of the most significant ones is his authority to forgive sins. And then in lesson number two, our second study, we talked about the cross of Jesus and how this is central to what Christianity believes and teaches, and that the death of Jesus on the cross is what enables the forgiveness of sins. It is what deals with the debt of sin that we had against ourselves. And that's why it's so central that we talk about Jesus and the cross, and why the cross, this instrument of execution, is commonly seen as the symbol, the key symbol of Christianity. And today we're going to get to the last of our three main legs of the stool, as it were, of what the fundamentals of Christianity are, and that is the resurrection of Jesus. So let's go to Mark, where we're going to be reading through, and let's look at where Jesus predicted that he was going to rise again. So start in Mark chapter 8 and look down towards verse number 31. He says, so Peter confesses in verse number 29, "Thou art the Christ," and he charged them that they should tell no man of him. And he began to teach them in verse 31 that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected of the elders and of the chief priests and of the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. So Peter has just confessed, "You are the Christ," and as we talked about last time, Jesus then immediately turns and says, "That means I'm going to die. You don't understand what it means that I'm the Christ yet, but you will, and I'm going to begin teaching you what that looks like, and that involves my death." But he also puts in there, "It involves my rising again on the third day." Look at chapter 9 and verse 30. So they depart thence, and he passed through Galilee, and he would not that any man should know it. For he taught his disciples and said unto them, "The Son of Man is delivered into the hands of men, and they shall kill him, and after that he is killed, he shall rise the third day." So again, in Mark, Mark records this teaching of Jesus. And then lastly, go to chapter 10, verse number 32. Chapter 10, verse 32, "And now they were in the way going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus went before them, and they were amazed, and as they followed, they were afraid. And he took again the 12 and began to tell them what things should happen to him." So they've been on the road, kind of the road of discipleship for Mark. He has this, there's this movement where he's on the road heading to Jerusalem, and it's the way of discipleship. And he's teaching them how they should live as disciples of Jesus. And now as they're approaching Jerusalem, he says, "Behold, we go to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man shall be delivered unto the chief priests and unto the scribes, and they shall condemn him to death, and they shall deliver him to the Gentiles, and they shall mock him, and shall scourge him, and shall spit upon him, and shall kill him, and the third day he's going to rise again." He shall rise again. So three times here in Mark's gospel, Mark records Jesus' prediction that not only was he going to die, but he is going to rise, he is going to come back again. So Jesus predicted it. Jesus saw it as a part of his of the plan of what it looked like for him to be following his Father. So that's the prediction of the resurrection. The second part of it, let's see if your paper maps up to mine. Yep, the facts of the resurrection. So turn to Mark chapter 16. So Jesus predicted that this was going to happen. And then in Mark 16, you can go there and show them and read along with them the account of the resurrection. "And when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome brought sweet spices that they might come and anoint him. And very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came into the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, who shall roll away the stone from the door of the sepulcher? And this would be a good time just to explain that this tomb was not like we think, where we've got a tomb that you've dug a hole in the ground and put a tombstone on and buried. These are tombs that were carved into the sides of the mountain. And so when they would cover up the sepulcher, it was putting a huge stone in front of it so that no one could get in or get out and, you know, rob the body or take anything that was valuable. And so there's this huge stone in the way. And these women, as they're going, they begin to wonder, okay, wait a second, how are we going to get this stone moved out so that we can anoint the body with spices as a sign of respect to the body? And when they looked away, or when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. And entering into the sepulcher, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment. And they were afraid. And he saith unto them, be not affrighted. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But go your way and tell his disciples and Peter that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him, as he said unto you. And they went out of the sepulchre and fled from the sepulchre, for they trembled and were amazed. Neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. So Mark records them seeing that the tomb that Jesus was laid in was empty. And then you can go to other passages, too, where there's all sorts of other accounts. Mark has the shortest account of the resurrection. But in other passages, you see where people talk to him. You see where Jesus appears to the disciples. So you've got Acts chapter 1. You can go to the other Gospels. You can go to Luke chapter 24. 1 Corinthians, Paul says who all, makes an account of who all saw Jesus. He talks about how Peter saw Jesus, and then all the disciples, and then at one time, over 500 brethren at one time saw Jesus together. So there are many eyewitness accounts that Jesus was alive after he had died. And Christianity believes the eyewitness accounts of the early apostles and of these early Christians that Jesus was indeed alive. And so Jesus comes, he says he has the authority of God. He says he's going to forgive sins by dying. And then he dies. He pays the price for the sins. He prophesied that he was going to raise again on the third day. And then what happens? On the third day, his body is missing, and people all over the area begin to see him. He begins to speak with them. And it's not just in some kind of apparition. This Jesus is eating and drinking with them. There is more. It's more than just some sort of hallucination. It's more than some sort of, you know, projection. It is a real person who is there with them. Based on all accounts, Jesus did exactly what he said he was going to do. He paid the sin debt, and he was raised again on the third day. So Christians believe this. This is the facts that Christians believe about the resurrection. But what does this mean? So at least we've already talked about in the last lesson, and then we can reemphasize in this lesson too, it means that God accepted Jesus' sacrifice for our sins, that the atonement was effective. It at least means that. But then in the lesson, the aim turns toward discussing what the resurrection means for all of us, not just for believers and Christians and what they think of it. Now, he has in here, if you've seen the book, he has in here a question that you would ask him. He says, as a child, did you ever try to imagine what the world would be like without you, like if you died? And then he says, comment that the question of death and life after death has haunted people in all ages. What does happen after death? Is there a heaven, a hell, or nothingness? And then he has a short poem, and he says, the Bible answers these questions. The function of what he's trying to do here is just to get the person that you're talking to thinking about life after death. Now, he has one particular way of doing it. How have you maybe got people thinking about this? Or do you have any ideas for how you could get into it? Because it is a hard thing, right? You're sitting with someone at coffee. Imagine you've got your tea. I'm going to imagine this just simply because I want to drink a tea right now. But let's imagine, you know, that we're sitting here over tea. So have you ever thought about dying? Like, how do we break into that in some kind of way that actually connects with where they are right now? Like, what are ways that conversation has come up? Yeah, over here, Janine.
I've asked people if they've ever lost somebody close to themselves in their life.
Yep. That's when I think that's when most people think about death is when they're encountering it. Mm-hmm. and they realize that this person who used to be here is gone. Where are they? Someone else? Yep.
When I was lifeguarding, I had a coworker that, I think it's Mormon. I just forget which ones are which. But he's Mormon. And so I had heard from the pastor before then to ask that particular faith, like, what do they, when they go to bed at night, when their head hits the pillow, do they know that they're going to, like, if they were going to fall asleep and not wake up, or are they going to go to heaven or whatever? And I actually did ask this Mormon that question. Like, are you confident? Like, are you confident that you're going to heaven, you know, based on what you believe and what structure you're following to be religious and have your whatever? And it really stumped him. And I just thought, that's kind of interesting. And it was interesting to see his reaction, kind of like on just, it did bring up that, pose the question of dying and going to heaven and, like, what, when your head hits a pillow, like, if you're not to wake up. Like, you know, I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
That was one way.
Nate?
Just talking about, like, maybe current events or something that might happen recently in the neighborhood, a car accident or something like that that could have been fatal. I think that would be a good lead-in. And for a different kind of situation, like at work, we deal with things that are dangerous, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a lot of talks about safety. And so it's really a commonly accepted, like, helpful thing for everybody to do is just point out hazards, right? And every now and then you get a little bit closer to a hazard than you would be comfortable with. And you just, like, sometimes I'll just be like, yeah, it could have been it right there. Like, could have been gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of just brings the reality to people's minds, I think. And so just keeping an eye out for that kind of stuff, I think, is helpful.
Yeah.
A million things happen every day that could kill everybody. I mean, it's by the grace of God we're here.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on that front? Yeah, Dave.
Sometimes I ask people about their church. Like, where do you go to church? Or do you go to church anywhere? And then it's a natural segue to, you know, to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that actually is what I want to say is that there's, so I asked hundreds of people, if you were to die today, are you 100% sure you're going to heaven? Like, hundreds and hundreds of people, I asked that question. The problem was is that the context of asking that question was I had just knocked on their door and maybe or maybe not, it was after dark. And I had just introduced myself and said, I'm Josh from, you know, so-and-so Baptist Church. And if you were to die right now, do you know for sure you would be going to heaven? And they're like, yeah, I was just thinking about death. I was just wondering if you were going to kill me. And now you brought it up. And now I'm really nervous, right? In the there is no way to get around the awkwardness of talking about death. And so in a conversation like this, I don't think we should be terribly worried about diving into this discussion, because this is what we are talking about with Christianity, is what happens after you die. And this is a much more friendly conversation. You've had two times you've sat down with these people to talk to them. This is not the same as me as a teenager, you know, showing up on someone's door, confronting them about death, you know, in the middle of the evening. So I think that it's going to be very natural for that to come up. And I think, though, that he's got his stuff here. I don't necessarily love the question, like, did you ever try to imagine as a child what would happen after you die? That doesn't sound like something I would ever ask. But the goal is, we want to make that transition from talking about the facts of Jesus' resurrection to thinking about what happens after we die. So whatever that method is for you, whatever the natural road is, and like Nate said, depending on your relationship with them and what's happening right then in life and maybe before everything started, knowing that coming into this conversation, you can at the beginning say, man, did you hear about that thing that happened? And just set yourself up, like give yourself a layup so that later on in the conversation, you can say, you know how we were talking about this guy who had, there was a fatal car crash. Have you ever thought about like what would happen if that was you? You know, like You can set yourself up strategically in the beginning of a conversation in the small talk to get there. But whatever method, it's not going to... There's no way for it not to be awkward that you're talking to a semi-stranger about their death. And you need to embrace that, because this is what Christianity pushes people into, is that uncomfortable truth that we're going to die. And that's just... There's going to be something uncomfortable about it. So get comfortable with it. Leon.
My 12-year-old granddaughter asked me before my surgeries if it was possible that I would die.
Yeah, wow.
And that was very kind of scary to talk about it with her, but I said yes, it was possible. And she said, where would you go? What would happen? Mm. And I told her, I said, because I believe in Christ, I will raise with him. And
yeah, amen.
She had some other questions. So it was kind of a backwards way. I didn't necessarily ask her, she asked me.
Right.
You know, what happens when you die? And what is it you believe?
Yeah. And as Christians, when we're in those situations like a funeral or the kind of, you know, death, the situations like that with surgery where there's potential death, we need to be, I think, even heightened in our awareness of the opportunities to get people and to talk to them there, because they're thinking about it in that moment in a way that they're not going to think about it the majority of the rest of their life. And so just being sensitive to those opportunities is a good practice. So what is the meaning of the resurrection? Well, let's go to Acts chapter 10, verses 39 through 43. Let's actually back up to 34. Let's read the whole thing. Then Peter opened his mouth and said, of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons, but in every nation, he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted with him. The word which God sent unto the children of Israel, preaching peace by Jesus Christ, he is Lord of all. That word, I say, ye know, which was published throughout all Judea and began from Galilee after the baptism which John preached. How God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Ghost and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. We've already talked about this in lesson one about Jesus and his power over the demons. And we are witnesses of all these things which he did, both in the land of the Jews and in Jerusalem, whom they slew and hanged on a tree. Him God raised up the third day and showed him openly, not to all the people, but unto witnesses chosen before of God, even to us who did eat and drink with him after he rose from the dead. And he commanded us to preach unto the people and to testify that it is he which it was ordained of God to be the judge of the quick and the dead. To him give all the prophets witness that through his name whosoever believeth in him shall have remission of sins. So Peter is speaking to Cornelius, a man who is not a follower of Jesus, but who is interested, and God has stirred him up to call for Peter, and Peter has come and is telling him this. And he tells him there's some information here about what the resurrection means and what it means for us. Well, first of all, look at verse number 42. He says that he sent us to preach and to testify that it was he, Jesus, who was ordained of God to be the judge of the quick and the dead. This word quick means the living, those who are still alive. So there's the living and the dead. Jesus is to judge them. And that indicates that there is going to be a time after our death when the dead and those who are living are going to be brought into judgment. And if you wanted to move to Revelation and go to Revelation 20, you can look at 20 verses 11 through 15, where the Bible talks about a final judgment in which all of the dead come together and are raised for judgment. So Jesus' resurrection, the fact that he is alive after his death, indicates that there is something that's going to happen. And he said, he commissioned them that they were to preach that he was going to judge the living and the dead. So Jesus is going to judge all people. Okay, so we're all going to be raised. Now that may sound like a good thing in one sense. Oh, hey, there's life after death. Well, it's raising, you're being raised for judgment. Jesus, all people are going to be judged. So there's not a person alive who is not going to stand before God in the judgment. And that's there in verse number 42 as well. Jesus is going to be the judge. Jesus is the one who's holding the gavel in that final day, as it were. And then lastly, in on letter D in your outline, all people are going to be divided into two groups. So 43 says, to him give all the prophets witness that through his name, whoever believeth in him shall receive remission of sins. So there are those who believe, and they receive remission of sins. Now, keep your finger here maybe and go to Mark chapter 8. And this is something they will have just read in this week's reading, so it should, God willing, be fresh on their minds, something they're able to look at. So chapter 8, verse number 34. Let's just go ahead and skip down to 36. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Whosoever, therefore, shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he cometh in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. So the Bible splits people into two categories when it comes to the judgment, and that is those who have believed and find remission of their sins, and then those who have not believed and find judgment for their sins. Those who are ashamed of Jesus now, of them will Jesus be ashamed then. Those who accept Jesus now will be accepted of Jesus then. And there are multiple parables that talk about this distinction between the goats and the sheep, the tares and the wheat. And you can walk through some of those if you wanted, just depending on the person and their interests, and maybe even some of the questions that you've talked about from the book of Mark. But walking through, that there are these two, there are two ways, as it were, on the other side of death. There is judgment that results in belief and life, judgment that sees unbelief and eternal judgment as a result. And then point out that there is no indication in the Bible that there is any chance to make a decision after death. So whatever the decision that one made, to accept Jesus or to reject him in this life, that is the decision upon which they are judged in heaven. That once, after death, there is not the opportunity and a second chance for a decision about Jesus. That your fate has been sealed at the point of death. So, summarizing the resurrection means that on one sense, as we talked about last week, sins are forgiven. In another, in tonight's lesson, that we are all going to be raised, that we are all going to be raised for judgment, that Jesus is the judge, and that the judge is between those who believe in Jesus and the forgiveness of sins, those who, as we talked about last week, take their ledger of debts and have handed them to Christ, and between those who have decided to hang on to their ledger of debts and try to solve it some other way. And so that's how the judgment is going to be broken out. That's the meaning of the resurrection for all people. So that now completes our three main legs of the stool of Christianity. What is at the core of the Christian faith? We've got Jesus and who he is, and then what he did on the cross, and his resurrection, and what that means for us now. Any questions about the lesson itself? Yes. Accepting him or rejecting him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if one chooses me then? Like, what if one just doesn't think about it at all?
So there is no, in the Bible, there is no such thing as a neutral ground between either of those things. So Romans says that all of us, what can be made known about God from creation is manifest to all, that there is God's eternal power and his Godhead. So just even in creation, we can see that there is a God and that we are accountable to him. So, if we refuse to act upon that revelation that God has given us, that what we know of God, then we are rejecting him. There isn't a middle ground of I didn't know. It's actually all men know, and all men are held accountable for what they know. And so that's especially true for those who have heard the message of the gospel, that they actually know the way, and the preaching of the gospel. When we preach the gospel leaves people requirement, or it demands a response. Like, you can't say, here's who Jesus is, and here's what he demands of you, and then people just say, well, I'm going to stay in the middle. There is no middle. It's, do I accept it or do I reject it?
Yeah.
That's the only two options. Any other questions about the lesson? Yes, Carl.
Now, I'm wondering about, like, judging of the living and the dead. When we die, we believe we're in heaven, correct? Supposedly?
We're with Jesus.
We're with Jesus.
Yeah.
So, what would be the point of being judged again, though? Like, were we never judged? We're just with Christ, and then once he returns, that's when we're actually judged?
Good question.
I'm not trying to dive too deep.
So whatever happens, what?
Oh, I was like, do you want to get back?
Oh, yeah, totally. I probably will because I don't have a great answer. I'm just thinking out loud. I'm just verbally processing here, and I defer to Peter, too. When we are with Jesus in heaven, that is not the resurrection. Or when we are with Jesus after we die, that's not the resurrection because our body is still here. There is a resurrection coming of the body, and that is what is our hope and that we're looking forward to. So, what I would say is that resurrection that is coming is going to be the resurrection of all of our bodies, and that's when we're judged. That's how I understand it. Is that...
You nailed it. That's
okay.
Right.
So that's the judgment we're waiting for, is the final, the real resurrection. After that resurrection, that's judgment.
Because the judgment is of us, and to be human is to be embodied. And so for us as a human person to be judged, our bodies have to be raised for that final judgment to take place. So what you said is exactly right, but just that element that it's you, and you are both body and soul. And so you must have your body with you to be judged for the deeds that you did in your body.
Because your body's going to be judged.
What if you were cremated?
Well, you still have a body. God's still going to... all of us are going to decay, too. Like, so our bodies are, in the end, all turning back to dust.
Gotcha.
How God does that, I don't know. But he says he will, and that there is a continuity. It was actually Jesus' body that was in the grave that came back. And so it's our body that goes in the ground that is coming back. Yes, God has to do a lot of things, because it's just a pile of bones and dust, right? Or in the case of cremation, it's a pile of ashes. But God is going to bring it back. And so there's actually Christian precedent for us to honor the body of the dead, because that body we're going to see again. So,
I was just thinking on that. I mean, thinking of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when they were put into the fire and they didn't burn up. I mean, your body doesn't even have to burn up in fire. Like, he can sustain your body.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing what God, he can do anything.
Yeah. I mean,
it was so hot that the guards, couldn't even get near it. And then three men walked into it.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
that's interesting what he just said. He said that's how God made Adam, right? God took the dust and he made a man.
Exactly.
So when he resurrects us, taking the dust and putting us back together isn't going to be the most,
all the things that God could do.
Yeah, indeed.
It's pretty amazing. We believe that. I
believe. Yeah. Amen. Janine. Way to call her out. My goodness. Wow. Okay.
So the question is what happens in the time in between? So you passed away and you're in heaven with Jesus. What are you doing then, waiting for your body and the judgment?
I don't know. I mean, I imagine that you're at least probably praising God in some way. Maybe we're all peering into what happens on earth. I don't know.
Does time go away for us in heaven then? And, is it...
Does time go away? What do you mean?
Right, because God is not limited in time. So when we're with Jesus,
Is limited in time.
He is.
He has a body like we do. Jesus is physically... They're a real person, Jesus. He's tied to that body forever. And he is passing time with us in some way. These are the things that are hard to understand. God, the eternal God, taking on human flesh and being limited, but that's what he's done. And he's living in time with us. And so when this is part of what's so beautiful about him interceding for us, is like, this is, Jesus is actually doing this. Like, it is astonishing and it's wild, but yes. So we're with Jesus. That's what we know from the Bible. So we can be very sure. Do you have
The only further verse I know that's, because I've been asked this question a lot of times, and the only verse I know that says anything about it, which presumably is not, you know, the only thing that's happening, is it talks in Revelation about the souls under the altar crying out for judgment. So that's the only verse I know that speaks of what is actually happening in that time in between the resurrection.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it does speak of them, though, as, like, these souls, like, they clearly, they're waiting for the resurrection, and they're calling for judgment. And specifically, it's the martyred souls. But it, you know, that's some,
that's something that someone who's dead is in between the resurrection is doing.
So they have some conscious existence, but that, you know, and it's with Jesus. But that's about all we can say. And I think sometimes people have a tendency to import everything that we know about after the resurrection to before the resurrection, but that starts making things really confusing and creating problems in other places.
Yep. Because we don't want, death is not good. Like, and if
Amen.
if we think that we are going straight to heaven and everything is glorious and that's the perfect resurrection, then death is preferred in something that we like are looking forward to and hoping for. Our hope is in death, but our hope is not in death. Our hope is in resurrection. Amen. And that's where we need to be placing our heart and our hope. And so that's why that doctrine and that teaching matters, is because our hope doesn't need to be in death as an escape from life. Death is actually the separation of the body and soul. That's a ghoulish existence. Like the movies that portray people whose souls are disembodied, there's a reason that's creepy. It's because it's not how things are supposed to be. And so whatever's happening with the dead now, that's not the way that things are supposed to be. There is a true longing for the day that my grandma or my grandpa are going to walk out of the grave. God's going to reunite their body and soul, and I'm going to be with them again. Like that is my hope. My hope is not that they are dead. My hope is that I'm going to see them again in the resurrection. So, other questions about the lesson? Okay. So, what's our time? A couple of comments on, so we've talked in the weeks past, as we've taught the lesson, and we've talked about a few of the foundational principles for this course that they lay out in the beginning. So, principle number one was that this course doesn't assume anything about their knowledge of the Bible. We want to start at ground zero and move up from there. Principle number two was that, let's see, I'm going to have to go back to it, proceed slowly, like working through this instead of trying to rush through the gospel to get to Christianity. We want to slowly move through the gospel to ensure that they understand what they're getting themselves in for. Principle number three, this is a short one, we'll talk about this for a moment. The third principle that they gave for how they've structured this course is that they wanted to do a limited time commitment thing. Because if we invite someone to come to our neighborhood fellowships, for instance, well, we've started the book of Joshua, okay, and we're going to be talking through that. And of course, gospel ideas should be coming up in our conversations with one another, but a clear and systematic presentation of the gospel is not going to be what they get from the regular Bible study with us on Wednesday nights or Thursday nights or whenever your group meets. And then even if they do come, eventually they're going to get a lot of gospel, but that's an open-ended time commitment that they have to learn about Jesus. So they've kind of got to commit to being there a whole lot in order to kind of extract some of that. Now, this is, of course, assuming that we're not speaking the gospel directly to them. But they wanted to create this course as a six-week program that has, they say 6 weeks. The ideal timeline would be that weekly you're meeting, but it's six lessons that you get to go through with someone where they get to sit and think and talk about Christianity, but then it's only a six-week course. So they're not signing up for a lifetime of Christianity from the get-go. All they're signing up for is, hey, 6 weeks, an hour a week, I do this little study, and then I'll know more about Christianity. That's what they're signing on for, is that short, limited time commitment. And so, and then because it's a limited time commitment and a limited content series, then they don't have to be intimidated by, you know, they're not coming here for like a, you know, Exodus series, and here we are in the middle of Exodus and diving into the details about the tabernacle. As much as that might be interesting to learn, it's not going to get them to understanding Christianity in the most direct and short way. So that's principle number three for the lesson. Any thoughts on that? Comments? Okay. Ashley, yeah.
So say we do this with a new disciple or whatever. Is there something you recommend to go after this? Like what would this be a good springboard to?
I don't know. They have lessons, but I haven't checked out any of those. There are other lessons.
I would do the Believe, the Little Believe book. That has like 9 weeks, and it goes through the foundational, like just basic teachings of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like leading to a gospel presentation. It's more like, now that you're a Christian, here's what Christians are supposed to believe.
Yeah.
And so that would be, that'd be the resource that I'm actually using with a couple people right now.
Okay, yeah.
Cool. There's lots of other options too.
Because at this point, the goal at the end of this lesson is to bring them to that point of decision I was talking about earlier. That is, here's who Jesus is, so what are you going to do with him? And that's the next three lessons have to do with our response to what Christians believe. So how do Christians respond to the message of the gospel? That's what we're getting into next. And so I guess the end, ideally, would be that they are forced to think and decide, what are we going to do? Now, of course, it's not like, decide tonight or else. It's not that kind of thing where it's just now or never. But it is bringing them to a point. And if God is at work in their heart and they're truly being drawn to him, then that would be the ideal time to push them towards that kind of commitment. And then if they do, then it's kind of working towards preparation for baptism and joining the church. Nate, did you have your hand up? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just see the family that they're coming to be a part of.
Yep.
That was a big part of my conversion, was just the beauty of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. So one thing I wanted to just touch on briefly is that since we're trying to give them, basically, we want to assume nothing and we want to get right into the gospel and we want to teach Christianity, why this course? Why how we've done it here? Because these people probably don't know that they were created by God, right? Like, they don't know about creation. They might not even believe in God himself. How do we start with someone, and why do we start here? And I think that you used this illustration earlier today, that if I were to ask you, what does it mean to be human? Or if I was to ask you, what does it mean to be an American? Describe the American political system to me. Like something big and like wild like that. You might start saying, well, I don't know. What does it mean to be human? I mean, well, I mean, I'm a biped and I've got a couple of, like, okay, that's dumb. I don't want to say that. What is it? I mean, we've got noses. No, I mean, bears have noses. So I have to think through, what makes me human? Well, I love. Okay, what does that mean? Like, suddenly you've got to start thinking through things that there have been millions of pages of ink spilled trying to think through. What does it mean to be a human? Or the American political system. We have a president, and there's a Congress, but what is at the core of it? Well, okay, I think we've got this declaration. Let me open that up and see what it says. Right? It's not the kind of thing that maybe we've thought about a lot and narrowed down to be able to communicate. Right, so it's the kind of thing that we have to think on and get to. And as Christians who are being deeply formed by Jesus, I am thinking, what does it look like for me to be a Christian as a 3D designer? What does it look like for me to be a Christian when I am, you know, consuming movies? What does it look like for me to be a Christian in these various areas? And I'm thinking about Christianity in like some nitty-gritty things, and then someone wants to know about Christianity, and I'm like, well, okay, here's how you watch a movie. So, that's not at the center of Christianity, right? Like, that's out in the corners where I'm trying to push my Christianity into. And what this does, though, is it reminds us that where Christianity begins is with Jesus. Christianity begins with following him. And we're going to run in, and God willing, this is the hope. This is that the dream, right? The mission that God has given us is that we are going to go out into this world and we are going to preach this gospel to people, and there are going to be broken people who respond to it and come to him. We want that. And we're going to run into people who are so broken, whose lives have been formed not by Jesus, but by rebellion against him, by a rough and difficult childhood. Their lives have been deeply formed by a world system that hates God. That's the kind of people we're going to be running into. And we're going to have the tendency as Christians, when it comes to running into them, to try to like help them be Christian, to want to see the deeply formed part come first. To say, you want to be a Christian? Well, here, you start coming to church every week, and here's a Bible. You should probably read that every day. And, you know, you should probably pray. That's just talking to God. And you know what? And suddenly we want them to do all of the Christian things. But what we need to remember is the starting point is Jesus. That we want to introduce them to him and who he was and what he did. Because if we can introduce people to Jesus and they fall in love with him, well, they've just joined us in the path that we're on. Because we, too, are still trying to be people who are formed in new ways by Jesus. And we are still learning ways of what it looks like to be formed by him. But what we all have in common is that we've all looked at him and we've all said, he is Lord and I'm with him. That's what we all have in common. And so what we want to do in any gospel presentation, but specifically in this one, is we want to teach them and give them the opportunity to understand and be introduced to Jesus for themselves. That's why we want them to read Mark, is so that they, for themselves, open the Bible and see Jesus for who he is. Because that's going to be what ultimately is going to shape their lives. Any thoughts, comments, questions before we close? Janine.
Mm-hmm. It says, don't tell everybody this. Now they go running and telling everybody. But then the angel says, go tell these people, and they run out and be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're just so rebellious, you can't do even the simplest little thing. And I like that, because also you can show that too as like,
mm-hmm.
even back then, they're looking at anybody's face. He said, don't tell anybody, and they still did it.
Mm-hmm.
And he resurrects, and his angel tells them, go tell people, and they be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You're not alone.
Mark is really fun because in the beginning, all the people who should be excited that the Messiah has shown up, they're not. They all reject him. All the people who you don't expect to get the Messiah, they're the ones that get him.
Right.
The people that you think Jesus would say, go tell everyone. He says, hey, shh, don't say anything. But then he's at this maniac in Gadara and he says, go tell everybody. And like there's this odd thing going on. And then at the end, it ends with, depending on how you take the last portion of Mark, it ends, everyone's afraid and they're silent. Like, and there's a lot of, it's really interesting. So, other thoughts, comments, questions? Carl. Yeah. Somehow the reverse psychology usually doesn't work either. Okay. Well, that's all for tonight. Let's pray, and then we'll be dismissed. We've got a few minutes before the kids are dismissed next door.
Thank you for listening to this message. If you would like to learn more about the Westside Baptist Church, please visit our website, www.BibleDirectionForLife.com. Subscribe to the podcast if you would like to hear new sermons and lessons each week. And remember that a sermon podcast is no substitute for opening up a Bible and reading it for yourself.